You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Sounds Wild and Garden Talk are regular radio features here on Juno Afternoon, and starting next month on Wednesdays, we'll add the Savory Moment to the rotation. Joining us now is the host and creator, Beth Short-Rhodes. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Shelley. Nice to meet you, and thanks so much for having me on Juno Afternoon.
Thanks for being here, and welcome to the show. You are a chef and a writer based in Sitka. Would you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Beth Short-Rhodes. I live in Sitka, and I am a chef. I have a subscription meal service called Fireweed Dinners that I operate here, and I do some food writing as well, in addition to the Savory Moment podcast. I've also written an essay cookbook and am working with a literary agency right now to find a publisher for that.
Tell me a little bit about how you became a chef and started your own food subscription service.
Sure. Well, I learned to cook in college. My part-time job while I was going to school was working in a small cafe in Bellingham, Washington, and I really fell in love with cooking there. I felt like it was a vehicle to explore the world, a way of being in the world. And I kind of thought that it was going to, you know, fulfill all these dreams for me, being able to cook good food and have people over for dinner, and that it would just enrich my life, which it really has. So from there, I went on and had several other restaurant jobs. I haven't had any professional training, but have worked in a lot of restaurants. And then, you know, eventually, a couple of decades later, I just decided that a food subscription would probably fly in Sitka, where people are busy and looking for healthy, delicious seafood meals. So I started that in 2012 and have been doing that ever since.
Now, what are some challenges of being a chef, of preparing food subscriptions and meals in a location as remote as Sitka, where groceries, I imagine, can be fairly expensive?
Yeah, great question. I do some Costco orders of dry goods. So a couple, 2-3 times a year, my wonderful husband, Steven, actually, when he's down in Seattle, he puts an order together for me from Costco and some, you know, big food distributors and that kind of thing. And that, the pallets of dry goods get shipped up. But of course, here in Sitka, I mean, we're one of the biggest seafood ports in the state. So I do have access to local seafood that I use quite often in my dinners. And then I do rely on a lot of produce from the grocery store. You know, it can be a challenge to get really good produce here, but if you're choosy, and just kind of sort through what's on offer, you can do pretty well.
Do you have much of a local gardening scene in town?
We really do. There's a big effort to grow local food. I'm really good at growing kale and chard. I tried for a long time to grow other things, and I know some people are very successful at that. But I have decided that since I feature a lot of salads in my dinner service, that I was going to focus exclusively on rainbow chard, which is just gorgeous, kale, and lots of lettuces. So, yeah, I have a big flourishing garden with those things. And I just kind of let the rest go because Sitka is not an easy place to garden in.
Well, with those ingredients supplemented with dry goods from Costco, the fresh local seafood, I imagine you can put together some pretty fabulous meals. Do you have a favorite or one that's particularly popular?
Let's see. One that I often will start my service off with, Fireweed Dinners runs September through May, and I take the summer off. So it's a Parmesan panko rockfish. I put Parmesan and lemon zest in the breading, and then that gets baked up nice and crispy. And then I serve that with creamy polenta and a really fresh salad of grated carrots dressed with fresh orange juice and some spices. And it also comes with a parsley walnut pesto. So that's kind of representative of what I do. I like to play with texture and color. So you've got some crunchy, some creamy, you got some oranges and some greens and some yellows. And then that comes with an espresso brownie. So that's nice. That's a favorite.
Wow. Simple and elegant. I can imagine it's beautiful as well. That sounds delicious. But how did you get from being a chef and also a writer into broadcasting?
Well, I have been a fan of public radio since high school, really, when I discovered public radio and a whole new world just opened up to me. I'd always been a big reader. But then when I started hearing the little audio essays on at KSKA in Anchorage, which carries my show now, it just opened my eyes to the way that it's possible to examine some of the smaller details of our life and, you know, just make some connections between those small details and the larger picture. So I don't know that I ever really had the idea of doing anything on radio other than listening, but then a few years ago, the idea for the Savory Moment kind of started forming in my mind, and I just decided that it was time to go for it. So I pitched it to a reporter at KCAW here in Sitka, and she loved the idea, and her boss loved the idea. So I wrote and recorded the episodes. She produced everything, and away we went.
Let's listen to a sample now. This is from episode 2. I believe the title is Breathing the World / Plantains.
Breathing in the World.
Breathing in the World. Okay. Yep. Okay, here we go.
Step in to the savory moment. Dog paws, cedar bark, new snow, a banana ripening on the counter. The world is full of smells. They catch us by surprise, stop us in our tracks, make us feel and remember. In his book, Nosedive, food writer Harold McGee explores what he calls flying molecules. The airborne chemical specks that vaporize from our environment and enter our bodies as scent. That's right. Smells are actually physical objects that affect our physiology. Take that banana. When its minuscule fragrance molecules enter our nose, they make a beeline for the limbic system, where emotion and memory reside. And with a single breath, we're deliciously nostalgic about Saturday morning pancakes.
Time for breakfast.
What about the banana's cousin, the plantain?
What about the plantain? I'm very curious. That's absolutely lovely. It sounds good. It evokes a lot of imagery and, you know, there's some sensory stuff going on as well. What goes into each episode of the show?
So I first sit down and start writing, and that usually involves me pulling out some of my favorite cookbooks and resource books. I'm a big fan of, in addition to cookbooks, things like the Cambridge World Encyclopedia of Food and Harold McGee's books on kind of more of the science of cooking. Of course, MFK Fisher's The Art of Eating. So I'll often sit down and kind of just start reading through those, and an idea will just kind of pop into my mind. And then I try to capture that in 250 words, which is about what my episodes are. And then I work a recipe into that. And then I go into the studio and record it and get my sounds together. And that involves, I have a little Zoom recorder that I take into the kitchen. So I might record some cooking sounds or sounds of rain or things like that. And I supplement that with royalty-free sounds that I find on the internet. There's a site that I go to that you can just type in almost anything, and they're sounds that other people have uploaded for people to use in creative projects. So I get those sounds into files, take it all into the station, record. And then now it's the operations director there, Adam, who then produces them and puts them into, strings them all together to form the episode.
Wow. That's quite a process. And you've done 13 episodes now. Are you going to keep going? Go ahead.
We are. I just finished writing and recording another 13 episodes for season 2. And so those are being produced by Adam right now, and those will be up on PRX probably about in the middle of October. And that is where radio stations can download those, or really anybody that has an account with PRX can have access to those.
Do you know how widely distributed it is at this point?
I believe it's, so far it's 6 stations in Alaska. There's Ketchikan, Wrangell, Anchorage, Juneau, Sitka, and McGrath have all picked it up. And I'm going to maybe kind of start introducing it to some stations in the Pacific Northwest and see if there's an interest there, because I think there's a lot of carryover with the kind of food that we eat in Alaska and the kind of food that they eat, especially in coastal Washington.
That's great.
So that is where I know that it's at so far.
I think there's some wider appeal there, just from the bits I've heard. Let's hear a little bit more. This is from episode 3 called Smashing Chicken Dinner.
Let's leave the digital age behind and travel to a time when people didn't slice and dice things into perfection. They just smashed them. Find that meat mallet way in the back of your very non-virtual utensil drawer. The kind your grandma owned. Yeah, we're going to use that. Slice a chicken breast thinly against the grain, then pound with the mallet until it's threadbare. Toss with lemon juice and salt, and marinate for 30 minutes. Meanwhile, wash the mallet with hot soapy water and get a fresh cutting board. Throw some lemon slices on there, a scattering of peppercorns, a fistful of fresh herbs like rosemary or oregano ripped from their stems, and whole garlic cloves. Pound until everything is smashed, more or less to bits. Scrape into a bowl of Greek yogurt. Pan roast your chicken in a hot skillet until golden, then top with the yogurt sauce. Never mind its frayed chunks of lemon and broken peppercorns and busted up garlic. Serve with something you dug out of the dirt and scorched over a fire or in a hot oven, like a potato and a carrot. Take that, social media. This meal looks amazing. Where's my phone?
Okay, that was pretty funny. You make it
that
sound
was a little bit of
go ahead.
A nod to the fact that my love-hate relationship with Instagram, that, you know, kind of in the food business, you know, you need Instagram to just, you know, show people what you can do, but, you know, at the same time, sometimes you just want to cook dinner and not worry about what it looks like and just enjoy it. So I had fun with that episode.
You make it sound very easy. Is it as easy as it seems to be?
Do you mean the cooking or the creating of the podcast?
I suppose the cooking, the meals that you're putting together, you know, they seem so simple, but it's not anything that I know how to do myself. So I guess what I'm asking is, what do you hope people will get out of the get out of listening to the Savory Moment?
Yeah, I mean, I do try to put recipes that are really pretty easy, that don't take, you know, a lot of highly developed skills or really any fancy ingredients. And, you know, so I hope that people, you know, first they get a recipe that maybe they'll put on their dinner table. But beyond that, I really hope that people find a space that they can enter. You know, I call the Savory Moment a culinary soundscape, because I envision it as a place where you can actually go and to find a friendly voice, maybe a little bit of humor, maybe you can learn something about cooking, but also just find a time to relax and, you know, think about food and the way that it nourishes us, and, you know, listen to a little bit of nice piano music at the beginning and end of the show.
Yeah. Well, we very much look forward to airing the Savory Moment here on Juno Afternoon starting next Wednesday. I want to thank you for your time, and thank you for talking to me about the podcast. Is there anything else you want to share before we say goodbye?
Just, you know, keep cooking and, you know, keep trying those recipes, whether they're mine or anybody else's, because making dinner for ourselves and others really lends something immeasurable to our lives.
Absolutely. And where can we find out more about you and your show or anything else that you're working on?
You can go to savorymoment.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Beth Short-Rhodes. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Shelley.
Take care.
Bye-bye.